very many women at all. I haven't had much luck.
Why?
They usually think I'm weird. That much was true. Slightly strange, kind of big, awkward, and ugly. I was no charmer.
Me too.
You think I'm weird? I shouted over the noise.
No, I mean that people have always thought that about me. You know, crazy girl always talking about monsters, spends all her time shooting, building bombs, or practicing how to chop things up, hangs out with a bunch of crazy people, paranoid, delusional, lives in a compound, that kind of thing. It takes a real toll on relationships.
See, I think that sounds perfect.
You would.
She leaned against me. Across the troop compartment, Holly made gagging motions. Julie and I both flipped her the bird. She winked at us and went back to harassing Trip.
Sorry to interrupt you, lovebirds, Harbinger said over the radio, but we've got business. Julie, see what other teams you can contact and find out their status. Owen has something he needs to do, too.
I need to get some sleep, I told her.
I know, it's been a tough day.
It's not what I mean. I need to make contact with the old man. I need to find the cursed one. Tomorrow night is it.
Are you going to try to see through his eyes again?
I don't know, I answered. I've got to do something.
She looked out the window and sighed, shuddering slightly.
Be careful.
I will.
Come back to me. I can't lose anybody else.
I promise.
Boy, much has happened, the old man exclaimed. What have you done?
I turned on the artifact, I guess, I answered.
It's as I feared. This is terrible, much terrible.
He shuffled toward me, hobbling on his cane. Hey, we're all still alive. It sure beats the alternative.
No, he answered. Not better at all. Not for you.
Hey, I'm the one that had a spine sticking out my aorta.
Better to be dead than be cursed tool of the ancient evil.
I'm nobody's tool, I said angrily. I was getting really tired of everybody treating me as if I was stupid. I did the best that I could.
No, boy. Now is much worse than before.
His bony hand grabbed me by the arm.
Come, hurry. One last memory to show.
I stopped him, pulling away. No, Mordecai. I don't have time to screw around. Just give me a straight answer for once. Where is he and how do I kill him?
You're not ready for such things.
He looked at me. His hard eyes drooped in sadness.
Boy, to do such a thing would make you dead for sure. Not just dead, but maybe worse. Much worse. Cursed like he is even.
But I'm not evil, I said defensively.
No. Surprised I have been by you being so good.
He lifted his cane and thumped me in the chest.
Good, but sometimes stupid. Brave, but proud. Too proud for own good. If not more careful, pride will kill you and blow up world. Think you can solve problems, but no patience to learn. Want to rush. Do things now.
He puffed himself up and did a very poor imitation of me.
I am boy. No, no, no. Hurry, hurry. I can do everything. No need to learn first.
You would need about two more of you to do a good impersonation of me, you old midget, I told him. Plus, I don't sound like that at all.
Bah, you are good, boy. But no longer can you worry about what you are. You are monster hunter. Your father, he made you warrior. Do not, how you say, pretend to be something else. No time for doubt. No time for normal.
He spat the word. You know about that?
I live in your head. What, I not pay attention? Now I ask one thing, just one. Do this for me. I promise before time run out, I show you new vision. At that time, what do have to lose? Your brain probably pop, serve you right. But world is destroyed right after anyway.
Fair enough. What do you need? He thumped me over the head with his cane. Hard.
Shut up your big mouth and pay attention, he snapped. Last memories while Cursed One was still just man.
He put his hands on my head.
We leave quick before he makes change. To be in his head at time, surely you die.
I rubbed the bump on my head. I just did not get much respect around here. Let's do this, I said. Lord Machado's memories were of dirt. Brown dirt. I woke up, face down in the mud, lying crumpled in my armor at the base of the mighty pyramid. I must have tumbled the entire way. The rain had stopped, and the jungle sun burned down upon me. I staggered up, heaving against the weight of my plate. Crusted blood coated my body and wept from my many wounds. My artifact. I crawled up the stairs, pulling myself forward on my hands and knees, so very weak, and the pyramid was so very tall. I pulled, gasped, and kicked, raggedly crawling my way ever higher. I blacked out repeatedly, only to find that I had climbed higher without knowing it. My skin burned in the sun, and my delirium and thirst increased. I began to crawl past bodies, past the torn remains of my soldiers who had so bravely fought the Stone Guardians. I cursed them for their betrayal. I cursed Captain Thrall. Finally, at the top, I kicked away the giant feasting buzzards. My axe was embedded through the back of the captain's now empty suit of mail. His body was gone. The artifact was gone. I screamed at the sky, cursing everything, swearing vengeance upon all. I tore my blade free, shaking it overhead. I vowed to regain that which was mine. The body of the priestess Corinaha was face down in a puddle. The carrion birds had pulled her open and eaten freely. Her fine robes were crusted with dried red, stained with her spilled organs. The buzzards reluctantly hopped away as I approached. She was the key. I had to bring her back. We were 2 weeks from the city, a hard trek through dark jungle paths. I could not carry her weight all that way, especially alone. Wounded and without provisions. I knelt beside her, and with my axe carefully stripped the flesh from her bones, breaking joints as necessary to reduce her to her component parts. When I was done, I bundled the broken skeleton into a soldier's cloak and tied it tight with a belt. I slung it over my back and stumbled down the pyramid in the direction of the city. Surely one of the remaining dark priests would know what to do. If I could bring back my concubine, she could reunite me with the artifact. Nothing was going to stop me. Days passed. Delirium increased. I ate bugs and small animals raw, crawling, dragging myself ever onward. Fever rushed through my body, eating away at me, burning me, killing me. I did not sleep. I pushed onward through the darkness, strange beings and spirits watching me along the jungle paths, urging me onward toward my destiny. I did not abandon my armor, nor my axe. They were symbols of my authority, and I would not give my enemies the satisfaction of abandoning part of my birthright to rust in the never-ending rain of a hated jungle. My first sign of the city was the towers of black smoke and the clouds of milling vultures. It was a city of the dead. A month had now passed since my expedition had left. The bodies of the people were mostly in their homes, on their sleeping mats, pustules open on their decaying forms, taken by a fever. I walked down the empty streets. The brilliant songbirds had starved in their cages. The only movement I saw was the carrion animals inside the doors and openings, as if they were the new owners. In a way, they were. Stray dogs, brought here by my men, prowled the streets, fattened by the vast stores of available meat. Fires had caught, and now burned out of control, with no one left to fight the blaze. The air was thick with smoke and ash. I did not know if any of the people of the city had survived, but if they had, then they had fled this cursed place. I made my way to the temple. The priestess had taken me deep beneath it, far down into the bowels of the earth, where strange things lived, and the very walls were alive. She had shown me the ancient obelisk and its prophecy. Surely there I would find my answers. Infection had set into my wounds, dripping green pus and leaving a trail upon the paved road. My body stank like the corpses in the surrounding buildings. I was aflame with fever, yet shivered because I was so starkly cold. I could not remember my trek to the temple, nor the long, deep descent into the ancient, unnatural cavern. I do not know how much time passed on my journey down the endless stairs and tunnels. I found myself in the cavern, reduced to crawling like some pathetic forest beast. The damp bones of Corinaha rattled on my back. I pulled my axe along, dragging a trail through the soft, living floor. Now, so close to death, I pushed myself along by willpower alone. I had no torch, so I moved through the dark. Strange things skittered over my body or slithered over my hands. I crawled, hopelessly lost, pushing onwards toward where I felt the obelisk to be. The air rushed and changed direction overhead, as if the cavern itself was breathing. It stank of rotting fish, but I could barely smell it over the stench of decay coming from my own flesh. At last my quest ended. The black obelisk was there, still impossibly thin, and disappearing into the darkness above. The ancient writings of the prophecy gave off a faint light of their own. My swollen fingers struggled to uncinch the remains of the priestess from my body, and after much effort, I was able to spill her bones upon the patch of floor where I had taken her to consummate our pact. "Old ones, I have come," I croaked through my parched throat, barely able to produce any sound. "I demand you return your priestess Corinaha to life." Nothing happened. I lay gasping and heaving on the floor. I forced myself upwards, knees buckling. I fell against the obelisk, barely holding on.
"Old ones, I am he whom you prophesied."
The writing was there before me, glowing, providing scant illumination. It was still in Latin. I read the words again. Surely it was I.
"I have done what you asked. I have fulfilled my part," I demanded. "Give her back to me. Give me my power."
The giant breathing continued. Each exhalation brought a greater stink of rotten ocean. Nothing responded. I grew angry. I found the strength to push myself away from the obelisk, standing shakily on my own feet. I pulled my axe into my hands.
"It is mine! Give me my power!"
The breathing continued.
"Damn you, then!"
I found the strength to lift my axe. I swung it into the narrow obelisk. Obsidian chips flew as I struck.
"Damn you!"
I struck again, finding strength in my fury. Lines of the prophecy winked out of existence.
I do not need you!
Bits of the obelisk embedded themselves in my skin as I hammered it.
I am the one!
The narrow thing cracked and shifted from the roof. More lines disappeared.
The power is mine!
A final blow turned the center into powder.
I curse you, old ones!
I spit on their prophecy. The obelisk toppled, the lower part shattered, and the top hung suspended for a long moment before detaching from the unseen ceiling of the cavern and falling, exploding like glass on impact. I was left alone in the dark, gasping, heaving, dying.
We must go now, boy! Hurry!
The cavern shifted. I had drawn the attention of the old ones. Shapes dropped down around me, somehow visible as darker than the shadows.
Come! Must leave his mind!
What's happening?
He has, how you say, pissed them off!
10,000 glowing eyes opened on the cavern walls as the giant tentacles encircled me, suckers piercing and ripping into my rotten flesh, lifting me upwards through the cavern into the gaping gelatinous maw of an old one. I screamed, but acid filled my mouth and poured down my throat, burning, tearing. Darkness. Pain. I was once again myself. Owen Z. Pitt. Thank goodness. The memory was fading away as the old man pulled me back toward light and sanity. I saw Lord Mashado as he was cruelly twisted into the cursed one. His human form was stripped away, replaced with the foul organic materials of the ancient alien trespassers. His mind was probed and tortured, shattered and pulped against incomprehensible forces, pushed beyond the breaking point of any mortal being. The torment lasted for 100 years. Finally satisfied at the punishment, or perhaps growing bored and tiring of it, the old one dropped the pulsing mass of black tissue back to the floor, where it landed with a wet splattering. Somehow his spirit survived the unspeakable torture, driven by hate, anger, and lust for power. Those things were his anchor, keeping him from being absorbed completely into the ancient beast. The inky mass slithered away into the darkness, husbanding its strength, planning for its return. The Polish village was silent. I shuffled through the snow, making my way through the rubble of homes and businesses, looking for the church, what I knew now to be the chosen place of power from the winter of 1944. My feet were bare, but the jagged stone, shell casings, and broken glass did not harm me.
Mordecai!
I shouted.
We need to talk!
I found the church. The steps were barren. I hurried up them and through the entrance.
Eureka!
I bellowed, cupping my hands over my mouth. The old man was nowhere to be seen. I kicked over a damaged pew. I did not have time for this.
Where are you?
Greetings, called a voice. I turned to see a man, a stranger, approaching down the aisle. He was short, dressed in an archaic steel breastplate and plumed, rounded helmet. A yellow and brown family crest was emblazoned upon his chest. His goatee was black and grease-slicked down to a point. His eyes were small and dark, set deep into a face tanned like leather.
He glared at me from under bushy eyebrows. "Your friend will be along shortly." One arm hung at his side, lazily holding the handle of his battle axe, the blade dragging a furrow through the ash and snow on the church floor. I realized he was speaking archaic Portuguese, the language of Lord Machado's memories. Not good. "Lord Machado," I said over the lump in my throat, "we have never been properly introduced. You have plundered through my memories, my precious things. You have delved into my power and tried to take that which is mine. You have ruined my plans and stolen the glory of the ancients, an honor which is rightfully mine. And yet I do not even know who you are." He stopped, only a few feet away. The artificial construct of the old man's world shifted violently as the cursed one intruded. The fabric of the surrounding town rippled as if it were fluid. "Who are you?" he hissed. I somehow found the courage to respond. "I'm the man that's going to kill you once and for all." Snapping his head back, he laughed, the same evil laugh from the memories. "How naive! I cannot die. I am eternal. Far greater things than you have tried to take my life. I refuse to die." "We'll see about that." He raised the axe slowly, taking it in both hands, balancing it, feeling the weight. He inspected the blade, carefully running one thumb over the edge. "I've killed thousands of men. I could kill your body now as you sleep. I could take your spirit and chain it to the artifact like your guide. Do not be insolent with me," he threatened. "It would bring me much joy to rip the heart from your chest. Try it." He did not move, merely stood, cradling his axe, smiling slightly, as if my bravado amused him. "Are you going to sit there or are we going to do this?" I asked, preparing to fight. How did you battle an immortal being in your own dreams? I was about to find out. "Nay," he answered, "for in this place you are safe. I am but a shadow, a message, a warning. I am here but as a friend. I come to offer you a pact of peace and cooperation." "Fuck off." "My young friend, you have much to learn." He planted the axe head solidly into the floor and leaned upon the shaft. "Tomorrow I will rule. That much is already determined. Those who stand with me will be greatly rewarded. Whatever you so desire, power, riches, you wish to have the vampire's daughter. I can see to it that the two of you shall live together for eternity, in return for your allegiance. It is within my power to give you whatsoever you wish. I will need captains for my army, great men such as yourself. Think of the glory." "Real tempting," I answered. "How about I just find you and shove that stupid axe up your ass?" "Those who stand against me will be crushed. I shall kill you for eons. I will wear your skin as my cloak. I will grind your bones into powder. I will drink your blood, and I shall chain your soul to the artifact forever, a token trophy of my victory." As he spoke, he began to change, features becoming blurry and darkening, as if he was cloaked in smoke. He grew, widened, black glistening tissue protruding through the seams of his clothing and creases of armor. The axe thumped to the floor, no longer fitting in the fleshless hands.
I shall take every one that you have ever loved. I shall turn them to me, or I shall swallow their souls. I shall make them suffer as you do, and they shall know, as their flesh burns and their skin is peeled away, that it was you who caused this suffering, that it was you, through your foolishness, which caused them such pain. And they will curse your name through eternity."
The cursed one's voice changed, as if the sound was traveling through water. The flesh of his face sloughed away, leaving a skull, and then black tendrils sprang from under his helmet and out of his mouth, coating his face in a withering mask.
"I shall take your family, your father, your mother, and your children who are not yet born. They shall feel my wrath and know of my eternal rage. I shall take this woman you love, the vampire's daughter, and I shall inflict savagery upon her that your pathetic mind cannot comprehend. Once she is broken, I shall give her to her mother, and she too shall join my legions."
The transformation was complete, and the true form of Lord Machado towered above me, bones cloaked in a slime-coated mass of moving tentacles, pure black hatred made manifest into a physical presence. The armor remained, only now dented and rusted, bracketed in filth and ooze. The mass slapped wetly against the wooden floor, black fluids dripping through to eat away at the ground below. The helmet dipped down, burning eyes gleaming in my face.
"Choose now. Choose your fate. Serve me, or serve eternal pain."
Incomprehensible fear grasped claws around my heart. I knelt down before the billowing wall of evil. The cursed one began to laugh, echoing through the shattered church, secure in his power and greatness. I choose neither. The pulsating mass that was the cursed one's head tilted slightly, betraying the still human reaction of disbelief. My hand closed upon the polished handle of the ancient axe as I heaved myself upwards. I swung the massive blade into the black flesh, slicing through the flailing darkness. The cursed one roared and struck. Chapter 24 Light. Confusion. Pressure on my chest. Hands restraining me, holding me down. I lashed out, knuckles colliding with something soft. Strong fingers landed on my throat. I reached upwards, grabbed the person, and flung them aside. Something struck me, grabbed me, lifted me through the air, and slammed me painfully into a rock-hard surface.
"Wake up, damn it!"
Harbinger shouted into my ear. I gasped. I was alive. And being crushed painfully into a cinder-block wall, Harbinger held me up by the straps of my armor, feet dangling several inches from the ground. He shook me violently, took one hand away, and slapped me silly.
"Hey!"
I shouted.
"Cut that out!" "Okay, he's back."
Harbinger released me, and I dropped to the ground. The much smaller man had flung me around as if I weighed nothing.
"Sam, you okay?"
Sam Haven stood to one side, rubbing the side of his head. A slight trickle of blood leaked out of his nose and strained through his enormous mustache.
"Kid's got a punch, all right. Like getting kicked by a horse."
"Sorry," I said.
"Geez, I was only trying to help. You were flopping around like a fish,"
the big cowboy said. I looked around in bewilderment. We were by the hangar, back at the compound. A hind sat nearby, blade still slowly turning. The team stood around me, looking concerned. I felt nauseous and weak. I slid down the wall and sat. Julie squatted down beside me.
You were having a seizure again. You started as we came in for a landing.
She pressed her fingers to my neck and took my pulse. She glanced at her watch.
Your heart rate is crazy.
The cursed one was in my dreams, I gasped.
Did you get us a location?
Harbinger asked. I shook my head sadly. Sorry.
Shit,
he sputtered.
Nothing?
He made me a job offer, I added. Great benefits package, eternal life, that kind of thing. All I've got to do is help him conquer the world. Or he's going to boil my soul for eternity or something. I did not say what he had said about Julie. I was going to make this slimy son of a bitch pay for that.
Okay, let's get inside,
Harbinger said. I tried to wobble back to my feet. Julie gave me a hand up, and Tripp silently put my arm over his shoulder and helped me to walk. Holly picked up my shotgun.
I've summoned every team back to the compound for the night. Pitt, you're going to need to debrief all of us. Maybe somewhere in there is a clue that we need to track him down.
Aren't the others taking care of local infestations?
Holly asked.
It's suicide to hunt vampires in the dark. I got a few team leads who were brave enough to try, though, so I ordered them back. So now we regroup, check our gear, and tomorrow we head out again. We have one day left to find the place.
I can try again, Earl, I said shakily. I can do it. Barika promised he would show me before time runs out.
You looked like you were going to die back there,
Tripp said, with concern in his voice.
You sure you want to do that again?
You got a better idea? He thought about it. Nope. The Lord helps those who help themselves. I wish he would send a miracle our way then, because we sure could use one, I said.
Maybe he has, Tripp suggested.
Maybe you're our miracle.
If that's the case, we're screwed,
Holly said.
No offense.
None taken. Hell, I agree.
No, serious. Think about it,
he told the group as we approached the main building. I never thought that I could be so glad to see the ugly old fortress, but I was. With the sun setting in the distance, the compound looked almost heavenly.
You talk with ghosts, you see visions, you even managed to turn back the clock. Explain that if it isn't a miracle.
Trust me on this. If you had seen the evil crustacean monsters that this artifact comes from, then you wouldn't be talking about the backwards-in-time experience as if it was a good thing. I shuddered when I thought about their giant saucer eyes floating through space. You would best put your faith in something other than me.
I don't know, man. I think you've got a job to do. I think when that werewolf killed you, you got sent back with a mission, and Barika is your guide.
Whatever, dude.
Actually, there might be something to that, Harbinger said. I'll have to ask Milo, since he's our religious expert, and see if anything like that has happened before. But right now, I've got him and Skippy putting the guns and rocket pods back on Hyde.
What about the feds? Julie asked. They specifically told us not to arm it.
Screw 'em. World's probably going to end tomorrow anyway. What are they going to do, prosecute us? It's the least I can do for Skip. The guy has been itching to blow something up for a long time.
Several different vehicles were parked in front of the building. Mostly they were plain Suburbans or large passenger vans. We were not the first team to return. The reception desk was empty. There was a brief note from Dorcas saying that she had gone, in her words, up to Forestdale with some of the kids to do some killing, and that there were some pudding cups in the fridge. The chocolate ones were hers, and she promised painful death upon anyone who ate them. The other hunters were gathered in the cafeteria. I had never seen most of them before. They were an interesting crew. Most of the heavy suits of armor had been ditched as soon as was possible, and the hunters were trying to get in the small bit of relaxation that they could. A few had not taken theirs off yet, mostly the ones who had been lucky enough not to be splattered with undead juices during the day's activity. In addition to the infamous horned happy face, there were several other team logos present. Some were cartoonish. The fire-breathing warthog, Scud the disposable assassin, Samurai Jack, and one that appeared to be a cross between a shark and an octopus. Other logos were more serious. A skull with vampire teeth and a knife through it. A highly stylized dragon, crossed Kalashnikovs, and a version of Munch's The Scream. All of the patches were black and olive drab green. Some hunters were eating, scarfing down whatever calories were available. A large group were clustered around the TV watching the news as more reports trickled in about the worldwide panic caused by the missing 5 minutes, but the majority of the hunters were cleaning their guns or sharpening edged weapons. Someone had plugged in a CD player and was playing classic rock.
Earl!
A ponytailed man in a Harley Davidson tank top shouted.
Hey, everybody, Harbinger's here!
The hunters dropped what they were doing, jumped up and crowded around us, many of them asking questions.
Calm down, Harbinger boomed. As soon as everybody's here, we'll have a full debriefing. Status, who are we missing?
The biker-looking fellow started to tick off names on his fingers. Apparently, he at least knew everybody.
Nobody called in any casualties today. Most of these vamps never knew what hit them. We stacked up piles of the bastards. Boone is here, but his guys volunteered to be perimeter security for now. Van Zant, Paxton, and Mayorga's teams called in and are on the way. Eddings just crawled out of some mine, said he didn't get the message to pull out before dark, so they should be last ones in.
Didn't get the message, my butt, Julie said angrily. You don't stay in a vampire hole after dark.
Crazy bastard,
Sam said with admiration.
Where's my... the boss?
Harbinger asked.
Called about 15 minutes ago. Him and the newbies kicked some serious ass up in Forestdale. They're coming. The boss sounded really happy on the phone.
No surprise. He hasn't got to kill anything in years. Thanks, Phillips.
Harbinger slapped the man on the back. He raised his voice so that all of the assembled hunters could hear.
You scumbags best not have eaten everything. I'm starved.
Fred's making up some dinner. He used to be a chef, you know. But right now there's pudding cups in the fridge, said one, as he spooned Dorcas's precious chocolate into his mouth.
You poor condemned fool,
muttered Sam under his breath. For that hunter's sake, I hoped that Dorcas had had a chance to use up her daily quotient of violence against vampires.
Whoa there, Chief. We're dying here,
the man named Phillips interjected.
Rumor has it that you had something to do with that 5 minutes. What was up with that?
Where'd you hear that?
It was all over the Fed's encrypted channels. Something about a demon massacre in Natchee Bottom,
a female hunter said. I loved the fact that breaking into the government's secure communications did not cause anyone to bat an eye.
Yeah, man, that was some freaky shit, said a short man. Whole world is going crazy out there.
Most of the others nodded in agreement. In the background, the news video was showing huge crowds of demonstrators gathered in front of the White House. The scrolling information across the bottom warned of the condition red terror warning, and the declaration of martial law across the southeastern U.S.
Well, I'll address that, but I'm going to wait until everybody's here. I'm tired, and I ain't telling that story more than once.
He pulled out a cigarette. Three other hunters whipped out lighters. Every person in the room respected or admired Harbinger far too much to argue.
Somebody scare me up something hot and made out of cow, and that's an order.
He leaned in, lit the end of the cigarette from one of the proffered lighters, and inhaled greedily.
It's been a hell of a day.
I agreed fully with that sentiment. Harbinger's team dispersed, greeting and conversing with old friends. I dropped my bag of gear on the floor and went to scrounge up something to eat. I was starving, exhausted, sore, aching, and missing a considerable amount of blood from the leeches and thumbnail-sized ticks. However, I was still a gentleman. "Julie, can I get you something from the kitchen?"
"Hang on, I'll come with you."
She set her equipment next to mine and hurriedly made her way through the double doors. I followed, stomach rumbling, already salivating at the smell of something being fried. I stumbled zombie-like in the direction of precious food. But Julie grabbed my hand, led me off to the side, waved quickly at the few hunters cooking and scrounging, and pulled me through a small side door into the hallway. "What's up?" I asked, glancing back longingly toward the kitchen. At my size and level of physical activity, I had to eat 4,500 calories a day to keep from getting cranky. She led me quickly up the stairs to the top level. I had not been up here much. I followed stupidly.
"We died today."
"Yeah, I've done that a couple of times. Don't get any easier." She stopped, glanced down the hall to make sure we were alone. Satisfied, she turned and looked me in the eyes.
"It really makes you think, coming that close, doesn't it?"
"I suppose," I answered, slightly embarrassed.
"You saved us. I don't know how you did, but you're something special. I can't explain it."
"You're the special one. I've known that since I first met you," I told her sincerely.
"I had the same reaction. I just couldn't explain it at the time."
"Really?" That took me by surprise.
"Yes, really. Look, I know this is sudden, but what you said back there, in the swamp, right before you stepped in front of me?"
I thought of the alien spear that I took for her piercing my heart.
"Did you mean that?"
I stammered, afraid to answer truthfully. She responded quickly.
"Because if you didn't, I totally understand. It was a really intense moment, and I don't want to move too fast, or anything like that. And there's just been so much going on with my family, and..."
She did not mention the missing Grant, but the look of guilt was obvious on her face.
"It's just happened so fast, and I wasn't expecting anything like this. There has been something about you ever since we met. And then when Grant abandoned you on the freighter, we fought about that. I couldn't believe he did that to you. And then he disappeared, and I know how I feel about you, and I should feel guilty because he's probably dead or worse, and so much has happened. But you're here, and I just don't know."
I cut her off. I meant it. I screwed up all of my courage. Compared to this moment, vampires, werewolves, undead, gargoyles, demons, giant sky squids, they were nothing. I would rather face legions of monsters than have her reject what I was about to say. I held both of her hands as gently as a brute like me could manage. Her expression was unreadable. "I love you," I stated simply. She did not respond immediately. I felt a nervous weight form in my stomach, threatening to drag me through the floor. I swallowed involuntarily as all of the moisture left my mouth. Finally, she smiled, a little smile at first, and then gradually it spread into a wide grin.
"Me too."
"Really?" The weight lifted. Lightning crashed. The heavens opened, and a choir of angels sang.
"Yes. Now quit squeezing my hands, you're going to break them."
I hurriedly let go. "Sorry."
"No problem."
She leaned in close, and we kissed. Her lips were warm and soft. She broke away and nodded her head toward one of the doors off to the side.
That's the room that I use when I work late and end up sleeping at the compound.
Julie sounded slightly short of breath.
I figure that we have a little while before the other teams get here and anybody notices we're gone.
Dinner could wait. I had not thought that anyone had seen us slip quietly back into the cafeteria. I had been as stealthy and nonchalant as was possible. Julie had winked at me one last time and moved off to coordinate with other teams and take care of business. The room had almost filled with hunters, and only one team was still missing, but was due at any moment. My gear had been pushed to the side. I picked up my bag, spotted my friends sitting at a table in the back of the room, and made my way over. The cafeteria had taken on an almost party atmosphere, as hunters who had not seen each other in months or years were reunited.
"Hey, dude, what you been doing?"
Tripp said, sliding over so I could have room to sit.
Nothing.
"Whatever,"
Holly said, as she pushed a plate of now lukewarm pasta toward me.
"We saved you some food."
"Stud." She winked evilly.
"Best eat. Keep your strength up."
Very few things slipped past Holly Newcastle.
"Thanks,"
I mumbled, and immediately began to eat. The meal was delicious.
"Wow, they sure did use a ton of garlic."
"The guy that cooked it, Fred, said that it might help when we fight vampires tomorrow,"
Tripp explained.
"Maybe they won't want to bite us if we stink like garlic."
Holly snorted.
"That's just an old wives' tale. Vamps aren't scared of garlic."
"Hey, up until yesterday night, we thought them turning into fog was just a myth, too,"
I answered.
"So until then, load me up, baby."
The final team arrived with a flourish. They were beleaguered, and their armor was still splashed with undead fluids. Their logo was Smoking Elvis. Their leader waved to the crowd.
"Sorry we're late, but we killed 20 bloodsuckers. Let's get this party started."
Shouts of "show off" and "about time" rose from the hunters, but it was all in good fun.
"Will somebody hose these guys off? Damn, Eddings, your crew smells like vampire shit,"
Sam bellowed.
"Love you too, Sam,"
he shouted back. Harbinger cleared his throat.
"Get your guys cleaned up and grab some grub. We need to have a meeting."
At that, the newcomers immediately complied. The rest of the room went back to its heated conversations and raucous laughter. Holly watched them go. After a moment's hesitation, she sprang to her feet and ran after them, grabbing the team lead by the arm.
"Excuse me?"
she asked as he turned around. I was close enough to hear the exchange over the noise of the room.
"Are you the team out of Las Vegas?"
"At your service,"
Eddings bowed slightly.
"I don't think we've met, Miss..."
"Newcastle. Holly Newcastle. Yes. Yes, we have met."
She surprised all of us by embracing the filth-coated hunter, hugging him tight, and holding him there. He looked bewildered. Finally, she let go of him. He studied her curiously for a minute.
"Ah, I remember now. Wow. Good to see you. You look a lot better. You've gained a bunch of weight."
He said that as a compliment.
"You must have put on 30 pounds.
"Thanks,"
she answered proudly. I looked at Tripp and shrugged. That was not something I was under the impression you could say to Holly, or any woman for that matter, without getting shot. "Earl told me he was going to try and recruit you. I'm glad to see you took him up on it. How do you like monster hunting?"
"Honestly, I hated it at first, but it felt like something I just had to do. Face my fears, you know?"
Yeah, I understand that. After what you went through. Now, though? Holly laughed. I love it. I told Earl you would be perfect. Look, I've got to clean up before he skins me for being late. She hugged him again. This time I could tell she was crying. I did a double take at that. I was not aware that Holly was capable of producing tears. He whispered something in her ear and patted her gently on the back. Eddings finally broke away and hurried after his men. Holly wiped her eyes and returned to our table.
"What was that about?"
I asked.
Nothing.
She mimicked me perfectly.
Now shut up and eat your spaghetti.
She sighed and watched them leave, gradually returned to her food, and ignored the rest of us.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad that you're all here. We have a bit of a situation on our hands.
That was an understatement. Harbinger paced back and forth at the front of the cafeteria. The conference room was too small to fit the assembled humans and orcs, so the large maps of the South had been brought downstairs and leaned against the wall. Many of the red tacks had been replaced with yellow tacks, but there were many new red ones dotting the map. It looked like Alabama had the measles. Every single member of MHI was present. The ones that I knew were a small minority. Julie sat by her grandfather and a young man who must have been her little brother. Boone's guys had come in from the perimeter and were standing toward the back. Meade had waved happily at me when he had entered. The orcs stood by themselves, slightly separated from the rest of us, packed tightly together, hooded heads kept down, shoulders slumped, not used to being surrounded by so many humans.
The team leads were sent a brief synopsis as to where we stood a few days ago. But we have had some new developments. At 2:39 today, time backed up for 5 minutes. This was felt by every single person on Earth.
From the brief snitches of news that I had caught, billions were caught up in hysteria over the event. Some were in a panic, others in a religious fervor, and some were in denial. Thousands of babies had been born twice. Hundreds of people had died of natural causes twice.
Yes, those 5 minutes were in fact related to this case, and it goes to show how serious this one is. This is it, folks. This is the big one. Our real enemy is one General João Silva de Machado. We like to call him the Cursed One. He's 500 years old, and in case you're wondering how you'll recognize him, he's the one that's a blob of black slime wearing conquistador armor. He's armed with some sort of ancient artifact that will be activated at the zenith of the full moon tomorrow night, giving us,
Harbinger glanced down at his watch,
approximately 22 hours. This artifact was the cause of the glitch. And that was just a sample of the freak show to come. When this thing really goes off, it's the end of the world.
What do you mean by end of the world?
A hunter asked.
Literally. End of the world as in kiss your ass goodbye.
The crowd murmured. MHI had faced some strange things before, but never anything like this.
The artifact must be used at a specific place of power, but we don't know where that place is.
Like the Christmas party in 95? The man named Eddings asked.
Correct,
Harbinger stated.
Speaking of that, the Cursed One has killed Ray Shackelford.
He stopped, counted on his fingers, and then added for clarity,
the fourth.
The hunters erupted in confusion.
Settle down. It gets worse. They tracked him down looking for information. They got him because Susan Shackelford, who is now a master vampire, knew right where to find him.
If the news of Ray's death had upset the hunters, the idea of his wife being a vampire stunned them into silence.
You could have heard a shell casing hit the floor across that cafeteria. I glanced over at the Shackelfords. The boss was as stoic as ever, arthritic hands steepled in front of his emotionless face. Nathan Shackelford resembled his sister and mother, but had the hulking build of his father. He was a handsome young man, but at the moment he looked tired and forlorn. Julie put her arm over her brother's shoulders as he hung his head down and stared at the linoleum.
"Yes, people, one of our own is one of the seven. Every trick we know, she knows. She helped make them up. Apparently she persuaded Ray to lie to us. Ray told us where to go, and we went there blindly in order to intercept the cursed one."
Earl paused to light a cigarette. I noticed his hand was shaking slightly as the flame of his Zippo wavered. He noticed the tremor as well, and snapped the lighter violently shut.
"Working alongside the Monster Control Bureau agents,"
most of the hunters and all of the orcs started to grumble,
"we went deep into the swamp, right into an ambush. It was the creatures from the Christmas party."
Harbinger waited for the shouts and swearing to die down. Probably half of the people in the room had been survivors of that night.
"The ones we fought at the Rift were just drones. These were soldiers. My team and all of the feds were killed, but when the artifact was activated, we started right before the ambush. Only the creatures had been sent away." "You can't die, Earl," someone shouted. "That's impossible."
"Nothing can kill Earl Harbinger."
"Quiet down,"
Harbinger ordered.
"Y'all know that isn't true."
"But—"
"Shut up,"
the director roared. The hunters instantly complied.
"It's possible because it happened today."
He waited a moment before continuing. I did not know what had caused that outburst. Harbinger was a legend amongst the hunters, but as I had seen back in the swamp, even he had his physical limits.
"The artifact was the key. It summoned the creatures. It has power over time and who knows what else. It's a little stone box about the size of a deck of cards. And you'll know it when you see it because it holds a world of hurt, and we're probably going to have to try to pry it out of the claws of something really bad. On this case, we have already lost two good hunters. Jerry Roberts is dead, and Grant Jefferson is missing, either dead, turned, or being held captive to be used as a sacrifice tomorrow night. If he's still alive, we're his only hope. So now we're going to listen to a story. It ain't over yet. We still have us a secret weapon. Owen?"
The room was still. I gulped.
"Yeah?"
"Tell us all your story. Don't leave anything out. Hurry up."
I stood awkwardly and walked to the front of the room.
"He's only a noob," somebody said. "How does he know what to do?"
Harbinger held up his hand.
"Listen up. This is Owen Pitt. His team calls him Z. He killed a werewolf with his bare hands. In the last week, he has saved the lives of my team members on multiple occasions. He's killed vampires, whites, gargoyles, and demons. He went head-to-head against Jean Darnay. He alone has seen the Cursed One. And for those of you still doubting, he has fought Agent Franks. Twice. And even managed to kick him in the balls once."
"I would rather fight the demons,"
someone shouted.
"Me too,"
I answered.
"Hunters, treat this man like you would treat any member of my team. Some of the things which you are about to hear are going to sound weird, but I personally believe them, so take that for what it is worth. Some of the things which you are going to be told can never leave this room. If this story was to get back to the Monster Control Bureau, then there is no telling what they would do to him. And know this. If anyone here ever speaks to the feds about what Owen has seen, I will find out. You can know that of a surety, and I swear upon all that I hold holy, I will track you down to the ends of the world, reach down your throat, and pull your spine out your mouth.
Nobody in the room said anything. They knew that he was deadly serious. My secrets were safe with this crew.
Owen, tell us everything.
I stood before the room of brave souls, men and women who in the eyes of some were no better than mercenaries, but whom I knew to be heroes. I was